What's up? What's happening? It's the Hoffman Show on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And we hit you off the top with legitimate big breaking news. It is not often in the year 2024 that you are driving down the road and I get to tell you something that you do not know, but I haven't seen a lot of alerts go out on this. It was just announced officially by the Commanders, but the Commanders have released former first-round pick Jamin Davis, who, of course, was drafted as a linebacker under Ron Rivera in the previous regime, switched to defensive end. I thought at times during the spring and the summer was unlikely to make the roster, did a tremendous job of continuing to fight, continuing to compete, continuing to try to learn and better himself at a new position at defensive end. And he stayed on the roster for a good long while. But part of that was always there were a couple of players that I thought were ahead of him on the depth chart in various positions that allowed the numbers to work that ultimately meant Jamin was here for now. And if he continued to improve, might be the guy that gets to stick around. But with Jordan McGee set to come back off of IR, is my guess on one of the guys who will ultimately be activated here with F.A. Obada already coming back and leaping him on the depth chart, and with the need for some more interior defensive linemen, thanks to the John Allen injury, Jamin Davis has become the odd man out. Again, this was announced just moments ago by the Commanders. They are releasing Davis, who could come back on the practice squad, and I would assume they would want him to. Why would you not have him come back if he's someone that you think could potentially help you if you get another injury? He already knows the system. You have a great relationship with him. It's just, this is what happens. It's a numbers game, and Davis is in the final year of his contract, so financially, it's pretty easy to do. Davis, of course, was the 19th overall pick in the 2021 draft, 50 games with the team, 36 starts, and he did play minutes, obviously, last weekend. Commanders also added two players, safety Ben Nickel and wide receiver Michael Strachan. Sorry, Michael, I do not know how to pronounce your last name. Nickel was with the Commanders during training camp, by the way. Strachan was a seventh-round pick by the Colts in 2021, so those guys are on the practice squad. Sheldrick Redwine was released from the practice squad. Also, just a few minutes ago, Kayvon Seymour, who had been signed to the Commanders practice squad, was suspended 6 games for violating, I believe, the substance policy. But a lot of news happening. The most important thing here is Davis. And, you know, something that I've been thinking about a lot this week post the Carolina game and in watching some other games this weekend, and it's something that actually I brought to Take Command to talk about with Logan today, is the amount of bad football being played around the NFL. And this will circle back to the Jamin thing in a moment, and a kind of miraculous fact about the Commanders, which is that they're not playing bad football. But when you get multiple high picks wrong or multiple big investments wrong, it can absolutely tank your football team. And the two best examples of this in the league right now are Cleveland and Carolina, two teams that the Commanders have absolutely walloped this year, who in different ways invested tremendously large amounts in the quarterback position. And it is far more amplified at quarterback than any other position, but it is worth playing this thought out here when we get the news that Jamin has been released and what it means for Washington and the rebuild and the job that Adam Peters has frankly already done. But with Cleveland and Carolina, they spent, in Cleveland's case, multiple draft picks and unprecedented money to acquire Deshaun Watson. And Watson was abysmal. Now, of course, hurt, but it was an abject failure at the position from purely a football lens that, based off how he was acquired, was needed to not only not be a failure, but they needed him to elevate the rest of the roster because they spent an undue amount on him. So saying, hey, we're not going to have all the other pieces. We're not going to have all the young players, the draft picks. We're not going to have financial ability from a salary cap standpoint to spend on other players. We need you to be incredible. And obviously he wasn't. And thus, their offense is one of the five worst units in the league on either side of the ball. They stink the high heavens. Then Carolina took what was essentially five starters. DJ Moore, 4 draft picks that have turned into starting players for the Chicago Bears. And I think there's only 4 and then a 2025 pick that's still to come. That's a third rounder that presumably will become a starter for them. And they put that on Bryce Young and said, Bryce, we're going to need you day one to be, you know, elevate this roster because we just traded away your best receiver. We traded away other ways to acquire good players. And obviously that was an unmitigated disaster. One of the worst first overall picks ever to this point. And you feel terrible for Bryce because although clearly Andy Dalton comes in and the Carolina offense is better with him, like it's not all Bryce's fault. And you wonder if he had gotten a start under a different situation, if he could be good. And you wonder, frankly, down the road, you see the way that Baker Mayfield has reinvented himself, and not that Baker was as bad as Bryce was, but Baker, Geno, Sam Darnold, these guys that were high picks, first, second rounders in Geno's case, that needed some seasoning, needed some time, and then they get to a good place with some good coaching, and all of a sudden they look like really good NFL quarterbacks. Not the best, but solid. Could that be Bryce Young's trajectory? Maybe. But very clearly, the way to be a terrible football team is to invest a lot, miss a lot, and then you stink. And where this comes back to the Jamin Davis news is part of the reason Washington is so overperforming expectations is they don't have studs almost anywhere outside of the guy they drafted second overall. And that's because the last regime went 0-for-4 on first-round picks. And that is impossible to do. It is just incredible that you miss when you have the second overall pick. You take Jamin with Chase. Part of that is injury. Part of that is a miss probably on the character to some extent. And I'm talking football character, the way that he worked versus the way that they thought he would. And it also probably speaks to the environment that was here, that a different place. Chase Young goes to a different place, a place that was much more similar to Ohio State's culture. I think you get, from a football competitive standpoint, I think you get a better version of Chase Young. And now he is what he is in New Orleans, and it's not going great down there either. San Francisco wasn't that interested in bringing him back. We see what happens there. Jamin, just overdrafted. Straight up overdrafted, poorly coached. If you want to take a project, you have to be good at coaching them to get the most out of the athletic traits that made them worth investing in the first place. I don't put that on Jamin. I put that on the staff. Obviously, we see what's happening with Forbes and on down the list of failed draft picks. But if you go 0-for-freaking-4, John Dotson traded to Philadelphia being the 4th. Do you realize what kind of talent hole that puts you in? Do you realize how that almost instantaneously puts you, and by the way, they don't have a quarterback that entire time, how instantaneously that puts you in the Carolina, Cleveland, Tennessee, Las Vegas, these teams that are historically bad. And yet somehow, in 1 year, by knowing what does work, Adam Peters has built a roster that Dan Quinn has coached up along with a tremendous amount of help. Cliff, Joe Witt, down the line of their staffs. To be 5-2 and one of the better teams in the league. Not only one of the better teams, one of the more reliable teams. Because they prioritize the right things. Yes, having the guy at quarterback that elevates the entire rest of your roster is completely different. And matching him with a schemer, by the way, and Cliff, who seems to be able to elevate him and anybody else, see what Marcus just did against Carolina, that's pretty important. But to dig yourself out of a hole where you have next to no blue chip talent, and I all due respect to Terry, who I love as a player and as a dude, John, who I think is excellent, Duran, excellent player. None of those dudes are top 5 at their position. The kind of, hey, we didn't just like do a good job with our first rounders. In John and Duran's case, obviously Terry's a home run as a third rounder, but first round type of guys, we didn't just do a good job. We got a legitimate, bona fide, good starter. Like, we hit home runs. We drafted Aaron Donald. We drafted the best of the best, Sauce Gardner. Not that one great corner obviously makes a team, but they don't have those guys that are top 5 at their position because they messed up all the picks that you use to get those guys. And they messed up all of the free agent signings you do to get those guys. And still, Adam Peters was like, we can get to 5-2. Now, I think it's worth exploring perhaps what some of those things are. What are some of the ways that the Commanders zigged when other teams have been zagging to exploit the weaknesses in the current marketplace, and also what understanding of team building does it show that they have. And we did that today on Take Command, and I'm going to play that segment for you at 5:30 because I think it's actually even more interesting in the background here now that we have this news that we didn't have this morning, which is that Jamin Davis has been released. We'll see 24 hours from now if he comes back on the practice squad or if he's claimed by someone else. So that's how we'll start the show tomorrow, or if, you know, Washington might not bring him back on the practice squad. We shall see, but those decisions to be made forthcoming. As for now, let's get your reaction at 301-230-0980. Not the question we had posed for Vibe Check Tuesday, but I'm curious how everyone is feeling about this breaking news. 301-230-0980. Jamin Davis has been released by the Commanders. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. Quick programming note. We were going to, and we put this out on social media, et cetera, et cetera. We were going to air our interview with Ted Leonsis at 4:30. We're going to push that back until 4:45 today. So here's kind of how the show is going to run down. We will take your calls now on the Jamin Davis news, 301-230-0980. If you are just tuning in, Davis has been released by the Commanders as they make a series of roster moves this afternoon. So we will continue our coverage of that, take your calls, et cetera, et cetera. Quick pivot to Leonsis. Very, very cool thing that I got to do yesterday and chat with him at this art gallery that he's opening that is open to the public as of tonight. But we talked about the Wizards and we talked about like the important stuff that you'd expect. So that is coming up at 4:45. And then 5 o'clock, we'll get right back on the story with Mitch Tischler on a Tischler Tuesday. But let's get to it. 301-230-0980. Let's go to Darius. Darius, thanks for calling. You are on the Hoffman Show.
Hey, what's up, Kevin? What's up, Greg? My bad. Yeah, so I just wanted to react to the Jamin Davis news. You know, I agree with you. I think he was, you know, definitely overdrafted. And I can remember back when they drafted him, how they were saying, you know, they kind of felt like he could be a project, you know, type of guy with his speed and try to put him in, like, the Micah Parsons role. But they didn't have a coach on the roster, on the staff, that could do it between Ron Rivera and Jack Del Rio. So I kind of feel bad, but at the same time, you know, it's a league, so you got to produce. But I think he'll end up landing somewhere else. I can't say the same for our cornerback, even though I kind of, you know, hope we could find use for both of them. But it was an effort.
Yeah, man. Thanks for the call. I think that, you know, when you look at Jamin, like, I think the most important thing I would say is, like, this isn't Jamin's fault, in my opinion. This is... He was set up to fail, and he fought as long as he could to try not fail. And I give Jamin a ton of credit, presuming everything that I heard out of Ashburn is true, which is that he really, like, stuck his nose to the grindstone and was like, I'm here to compete. I'm here to, like, fine, change my position. Like, I'll fight. I'm not gonna fight you. I'm going to fight for my spot. And that takes a lot. That tells me a lot about his competitive character. It's high. He's getting cut because he's not a good defensive end in the NFL, which kind of, no kidding, he's not. Like, defensive end is hard, man. And that is another thing about what I was talking about with the Commander specifically not being terrible as a football team, with considering how many first-round picks they've missed on. Think of the positions they've missed on. They are three of the four, and then ultimately four of the four most expensive positions in the sport outside of quarterback. So quarterback's one. What's the most the next highest paid guys? Edge rushers? Okay. They missed on one of those. Wide receivers? Missed on one of those. Corner? Missed on one of those. We're just missing a left tackle. That's all they're missing. And a quarterback. I mean, holy crap, man. If you don't have those with your draft picks or with highly paid players, your team's going to suck. And somehow this team doesn't suck. 301-230-0980. Let's go to Aveen in D.C. Aveen, thanks for calling. What's your reaction to the Jamin Davis news?
Hey, Craig. With the current Quinn Peters partnership we have right now, you know, the direction the organization's moving in, what it feels like. Those Rivera draft picks just feel so much in the past to me. And, you know, just with all the players we signed this offseason, the players we drafted, there weren't, like, any splash signings or anything, but those guys have a plan for each of those players, and those players all have a role, and it seems like all the players we signed so far, like, are contributing to the team. It just shows, like, what a difference it makes, like, when you have the coach, GM on the same page, they know what they're doing, they have a plan, and you can get these guys to contribute.
No, so, yeah.
It just makes it, yeah.
100%. I think it's such a good point. Thanks for the call. Like, when you have a unified vision, which is, I think, one of their big things, sometimes I can't get, Anthony, I can't remember which one's which between the Commanders and the Wizards, whether who's got the unified vision, who's got the organizational alignment. I think alignment's the Commanders' one. I think unified vision is the Wizards.
Yeah, I think...
I don't think it matters that much. I think
yeah, I'm thinking hard as a mug.
Well, don't hurt yourself over there. Maybe do a Google, but certainly don't.
I think
I actually did just see a small firework go off inside of Anthony's head. That was a brain cell of his exploding. The point is, when you have everybody on the same page, and you know, not just on the same page from like a vision standpoint, but I think like Adam Peter's superpower is he goes to coaches and he goes, "What do you want? I want a corner who can do X, Y, and Z." Okay, cool. Here's that guy. By the way, he can't do F. Okay, we won't ask him to do F. And that's the synergy that we're talking about between what Adam Peters can do, find very specific skill sets, and nail it, and what Dan Quinn does. Because, by the way, Dan Quinn's this way as a coach. He's like, I will ask you to do this. Joe Witt has talked about this. BSJ and I talked about this in the spring on the corners. Like, we are asked to do specific things, and they tell us we don't have to worry about other stuff. And that clarity of assignment goes a long, long way because there's certain things that certain guys can't do, and that's okay. If you can do everything, you're a star. But I can make you a star in your role by asking you to do the right role as a coach and as a personnel person who gives an accurate scouting report of a skill set to a coach. And I think we're seeing that. And, you know, I get why they decided to do what they did with Jamin. In terms of, hey, he's really explosive, he's really strong, he works really hard, can we convert him into a Micah Parsons type? I thought they actually used him really well this year. I thought they gave him opportunities to rush, but they also occasionally would zone blitz with him and drop him out and be like, okay, for a linebacker, he's not great in coverage, but for a defensive end, he's phenomenal because he's actually done this before. And so they would choose some of their spots, but if ultimately they can get some of that stuff from other guys, maybe it's playing more Jordan McGee and putting Frankie Louvu on the edge more. I thought it was interesting last week that Joe Witt Jr. was like, yeah, you know, Micah Parsons and Frankie Louvu, I don't want to compare the players, but we kind of have that role for him. And I'm like, well, eventually what you did with Micah Parsons was move him full-time to edge. And Frankie Louvu is definitely a full-time better pass rusher than he is someone in coverage. So maybe they want to get Jordan McGee on the field more now that the rookie, I presume, is back. That or he's going to IR for the rest of the year. I think like this was the week / the day that they had to do that. So I'll do a little quick follow-up on that. But whatever the reason is, whatever the corresponding roster moves are, they are definitely going to try to figure out the best combinations that they have in their front seven. And with the options available to them, Jamin Davis was the odd man out. He could come back on practice squad. We'll see. But as for now, Jamin is on waivers. So next 24 hours is going to be interesting for him. If he gets claimed somewhere else, then someone will pick him up. I kind of doubt that would happen. If anything, like, don't claim him. Just try to get him on. If you think you need Jamin Davis that bad, okay, you can pay him whatever his rookie salary is. But if you let him clear waivers, then the Commanders would have to pay him that money, and then he gets to go sign a new contract somewhere else, and someone will sign him to a league minimum. So we'll ultimately see where that goes. But that is the current status of things as we sit here at just before 4:30 on a Monday. On a Tuesday. Again, coming up at 4:45, Ted Leonsis, one-on-one. Talked to him yesterday. You want to hear what he has to say about the new arena in D.C., as well as a couple of key things with the Wizards. That's coming up at 4:45. Mitch Tischler, 5 o'clock. More of your calls next. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app, and we're streaming live a little more clearly on YouTube. Just had to clean the camera, Anthony. Sometimes it'd be like that. You look up and you're like, that's dusty. Ain't nothing about this show is ever going to be dusty on my watch.
Do I look dusty?
No.
Okay. Just
we got the light. The light this time of year comes in terribly on our backlighting. We gotta get some backdrops. Anyway, nobody cares on the radio. 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980 is the phone number. That is where you call and give us all of your takes on Jamin Davis being released, the former Commanders' first-round pick in the final year of his contract, gets cut, presumably for linebacker Jordan McGee to make his return off of IR. He's got to get activated this week. He's missed the maximum amount of time that you can miss before you either revert to IR and are done for the season without the ability to come back, or you are back and good. So he can't stay on IR and be practicing this week. It's now or never. So unless something went wrong in his rehab, it's presumably for Jordan McGee, and they need that roster spot. And guys like Michael Walker, who perhaps were on the cutting edge earlier in the season, have played well. And so they want that spot there. And especially is like they're obviously going to keep Dominique Campton around, but it's basically a redshirt year for him as he moves to linebacker from safety. So Jamin's the guy with F.A. Obata back that ultimately gets that call. 301-230-0980. Let's go to Mark. Mark, thanks for calling. You are on the Hoffman Show.
Thank you for taking my call. Got two quick comments. Number one, I'm surprised it took this long to cut Jamin because he was not a very good football player. He was a good athlete. When they drafted him, they were super enamored with his speed and his strength. But at linebacker, he was not very good. And at defensive end, he was not very good. And he stuck around only because, you know, he was a first-round pick. If he was a late-round pick or an undrafted free agent, he would have been gone a long time ago.
Under the Rivera administration, they probably would have moved on. Maybe, I don't know. This administration I don't think they cared about his draft status, to be honest. They saw an athlete.
The other administration wouldn't have released him because they drafted him.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If he had been a seventh round pick, with his level of production, would he have stayed around? Probably not. I think you're probably right about that. I think when this administration took over, they didn't care that he was a first-round pick. They thought he was worth the experiment, and he played well enough to be the last guy until there were more guys like F.A. Obata coming off on IR ahead of him, and now here we are.
Yeah, and my second comment is, I don't think they completely whiffed on all first-round draft picks because you're forgetting Chase Young was the defensive rookie of the year.
And, Mark, all due respect, I'm not forgetting that. I'm not forgetting that. A second overall pick is an abject failure if all they do is win rookie of the year and then do not produce a lick for the remaining 3 years.
You're forgetting he tore his knee up.
I am not forgetting
any
of that.
And he's a guy that was a little bit undersized and relied on speed, and he wasn't the same player after tearing up his knee and missing close to 2 years.
Yeah, so. But in no way does that mean that they were actually successful. Like, we don't know that alternate universe. And there was a lot of stuff Chase Young's rookie year that while he was freaky enough as an athlete to make some plays and obviously produce enough to get rookie of the year, there were a lot of concerns about his game's growth moving forward that he never corrected.
Yeah, he was selfish. He was selfish and just chased sacks.
So they don't get a passing grade for Chase Young. Sorry, that's not it. Thanks for the call, Mark. 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980 is where you call in, or if you want to leave a comment in the YouTube chat. Let's see. Dun, 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 dun. Who's Smith about to come to Washington? Who's Anthony? Who do we think a pass rusher?
Zadarius.
Oh yeah. Here's the thing. I don't know that Adam Peters is going to be as active in the trade market as people think. I also don't know that that means Adam Peters ain't going to make a trade. I think that the people know a very small amount of names because they know guys that have had big sack production that are the stars, the whatever. And some of those guys do make sense. Like Zadarius Smith plays hard, like whatever. But I'll give you an example. And I've even said this name the past couple of days. And I thought a little bit more about it. I watched him a little bit more, obviously, this weekend. But, like, Deontay Johnson's super talented. There is no way in hell they are trading for Deontay Johnson. I would be stunned. Why? Watch the tape. Doesn't run with the intensity. And, look, maybe they know. The one caveat I would say is, like, if they know him, if Adam interviewed him in the draft process and was like, I know what's in that kid, and he's just... he's not going to thrive in the kind of situation that is happening in Carolina because that's a dumpster fire. We can save him. Okay. But I kind of think Adam Peters' kind of guy is the kind of guy that doesn't need saving, that is super self-motivated, just plays with their hair on fire no matter what, lives and breathes football. And, like, get me a guy like Noah Brown, who the Texans are like, we got some other guys. And Adam Peters is like, that dude will play his face off every single snap. I don't know how much All-22 you watch outside of the clips that I pull for you, Anthony, but you want to see a wide receiver block? Oh, my God, Noah Brown. He moves people. There is an intense level of effort, and that's the perfect fit for here. Like, yeah, he's also big and strong and fast and runs pretty good routes. He's got good hands, but, like, he makes the offense work on certain stuff and turns, like, solid gains into big gains because he'll move a corner that's supposed to have edge contain completely out of the picture so that you don't even realize that he's the guy who had the edge contained because he's no longer on the edge. It is not contained. And I think that there is a much better chance that they find someone like that, that than a big name that people have heard of. Now, at the edge position, like, guys with pass rush juice don't come around that often. And so it seems like Hassan Reddick is going to stay in New York. I don't know who else is available. Maybe is it Arius Smith, someone. But at the end of the day, like, I don't think this means anything other than they need a roster spot for Jordan McGee. Like, this was their fifth defensive end. This isn't a sign that they're actually about to trade for one. Now, they might, but they're making this move probably because Jordan McGee is ready to come back on the roster and they have to open up the roster spot before they take the practice field tomorrow morning.
Yeah, I mean, I think as the trade deadline draws near, there's going to be a lot of fans that, you know, are expecting us to make moves. And I think, you know, a lot of people see defensive tackle as, you know, still a weakness on our defense. Like, even when you look at the numbers, we're 16th. In the league as a defense, and I'm not sure, you know, what's been reflected in our first seven games is actually indicative of what we have on the defensive side of the ball. So I think, you know, people just, you know, they still want improvement, and it's going to start up front. And I'm not going to lie, Craig, I was looking, you know, around the Twitter waves. You know, uh-huh. Zadarius does have 4 sacks in the season. The Commanders.
Yeah, I mean, Zadarius Smith.
Yeah.
If they want to trade for Zadarius Smith and they can do it for a, I don't know, a 6th or 7th round pick, like, shoot.
Yeah.
I would
do that.
On a dime.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, Zadarius, if I'm remember, I haven't watched Zadarius Smith in a while. And in terms of, like, actually studied him, but, like, pretty big dude who's pretty stout against the run, if I'm remembering correctly.
He can do it all.
Yeah, he's a really good player. But I also think that, like, This staff has found ways to make stuff work, and mm-hmm. they're continuing to tweak and will continue to find ways.
Yeah.
For instance, Jerzon Newton's a good young football player, but he missed a lot of camp. He's undersized. He's a rookie, and he hasn't really figured out how to play the run in the NFL yet. And Daron Payne is also kind of undersized. It's hard to call a 6 foot, whatever, 300, whatever pound man undersized. But, like, he's strong and he's powerful, but he doesn't play the way that Fedarian Mathis plays. And I think the staff quickly realized last week that Fedarian Mathis is probably the better pairing with Daron than Jerzon Newton. And the Panthers went from pushing the line of scrimmage up the middle 6 yards deep into the linebacker's laps to Bobby Wagner and Frankie Louvu being at the line of scrimmage.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, all of a sudden, okay, we're going to play those two. And then Jerzon's playing with Sheldon Day, and that's working too. Sheldon Day was on the street 2 weeks ago, so to speak. Sheldon Day's not an amazing, outstanding, stunningly fantastic football player. He's a big-ass man who knows what his job is. And, like, sometimes that's the NFL. Sometimes the NFL is finding the right mix of guys, not necessarily the guy. Yeah. Now, if you can get the right mix of guys next to the guy, then you get greatness. But right now, I think defensively, this team is looking for good, nevertheless great. Great's going to come with draft picks on down the road. They're going to build through the draft, and that's what that means, is it involves some patience of actually getting to the draft. But in the short term, if they can find some guys that make what they do a little bit better, they'll probably make those moves as well. 301-230-0980 is the number. We'll get back to your calls coming up in a little bit. I'll get back to the Commanders at 5 o'clock with Mitch Tischler. And next, the owner of the Washington Wizards, Washington Capitals, Washington Mystics, chairman of Monumental Sports, Ted Leonsis. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And yesterday, I got a very, very cool opportunity. I got to go to a preview of the Harry Benson Gallery, which is just outside of Capital One Arena in one of the buildings next door, as Ted Leonsis told me, a former hair salon. And Ted has been a longtime collector of Harry Benson's work. He's a photographer, and he's been there for just an incredible amount of history. And so we talked a little bit about that. If you want the full interview with Ted, it's online and it will be in our podcast feed. So at youtube.com/@Craig Hoffman and at the Team 980 in the Hoffman Show podcast feed. But we're going to pick up the interview where I asked Ted about the news of the day yesterday, which is that he and the city had come to a new agreement about the future of Capital One Arena. And I said, hey, at this point in the news cycle, what can you tell us?
Just another step in the long road to transforming this building. And, we announced, it seems like forever ago, that, we're staying in D.C. and the city was going to help. They're putting up about $500 million. We're putting up $300 million. This will be a major, I think the largest investment in an inner city existing building since Madison Square Garden. Twice the investment, let's say, of what just happened up in Philadelphia for the Flyers and the Sixers. And shows a commitment not only to our fans, but really to downtown. And it'll start next summer. We're going to make a major investment on the first floor, the event level, just to have more space for our players. Our players deserve world-class training, world-class locker rooms, film rooms, and the like. And we'll start moving up all four floors, and then obviously outside will be the last thing that we finish. We've released some of the concept and ideas and plans, but there's this arms race that goes on with teams. You have to have great facilities, you've got to have great neighborhoods, you've got to have great school systems. What I'm most pleased with is that it feels like we're in it together now with the city. We met with the president of the Metro last week. He came to a game, and he gets how important public transportation is. We've tons of meetings with the police chief. She understands traffic mitigation, syncing the lights, keeping the outside clean. We just need to uplift the services, and the city's made that commitment, and we'll manage everything in the building inside, but the city obviously is responsible for the outside. But I have a real good vibe that this next 25 years after the deal is consummated, and the deal was just presented to the city council, they had previewed it and voted on it previously, and now they'll do another two votes, if you will, have public hearings, and my expectation is that this will be approved and we'll move forward.
Ted Leonsis with us here on the Team 980. Of course, you're home for Wizards and Mystics basketball. And Ted, I want to bring up the Mystics for a second because the last game of the season, you set the all-time WNBA attendance record. Attendance at ESA was up, and the excitement in the WNBA, concluding in last night's finals, has never been higher. That's all great. The problem with construction in the summer at Capital One is that might be limiting if there are more opportunities to play there. So how is that getting managed as that brand and that league continues to grow and the calendar of the construction?
Yeah, it's going to be a real issue, and we've already started to look at where can we play that has 20,000 seats. It'll be a stub period, if you will, three years. Obviously, we can still play in our existing arena, but that has 4,000 or 5,000 seats. So for those games that we could sell 20,000 tickets, we'll have to find an alternate place. Obviously, we manage George Mason, this University of Maryland. I'm sure we'll come to a solution. There'll be people who aren't happy with it, but I've disclosed this to the commissioner. We've disclosed it to the league. Everyone understands what we're up against, but you know, we won the Stanley Cup. One of our campaigns was, it's worth the wait. That's how I think we have to look at this project. If we're going to spend $800 million, we've got to be able to use the offseason, just like Madison Square Garden when they did their big rehab. When do you do it? So someone asked me the other day, what if the Caps go or the Wizards go to the finals and they're playing all the way to June? Well, obviously, we're not going to be constructing while we're in the playoffs. And so we'll figure it out, but it's going to be messy over the next couple of years, no doubt about it. No one's ever tried to do what we're doing. We've taken another 300,000 feet from this building. And, you know, as you walk around this building, I think you'll see, as I said, this used to be a hair cutting salon. It did not look anything like this. And now it looks like a world-class art gallery. We can make it new. That's my intention, is to build a new building and make it look new for the players, for the fans, for the city, for the neighbors. But to get there, it's going to be a lot of work. There'll be a lot of Pardon Our Dust T-shirts being worn.
I feel like that could also be the theme of the rebuild that it's being embarked on by Michael and Will on the Wizard side of things. Pardon Our Dust. There's some things we have to do. And I think that one of the things that I hear from callers, et cetera, is the patience that is being asked to be had. People understand, like, you can't keep doing what you were doing, otherwise you get the same results. So a dramatic, drastic change was necessary. But ultimately, as the chairman, you're the one who has to green light a long process when Wizards fans have been waiting a long time. So I'm just curious, from your perspective, the discussions you had to green light that, and ultimately your continued message to fans, say, hey, this is going to be, you know, to say what you just said about all of this, worth it in the end.
You're being very charming now. I've listened to you on the radio. I've read your blogs. What would you have us do?
I would have you do exactly what you're doing.
I appreciate that. And so I did it once with the Capitals. It was worth the wait. And we actually did it originally when I bought the Wizards. We traded away all our players. We got high picks. John Wall, Bradley Beal, Otto Porter. We were the only team in the NBA who had drafted, signed, and maxed those three players. And we still had room to bring in a transformative free agent. Didn't work. Injuries happen. And so we did get stuck in mediocrity. And, you know, we had a lot of good players, just couldn't get through. And so if you end up making the playoffs, missing the playoffs by a couple of games, it's the worst place to be. And so strategically, we just said, it's time. And if you're going to make a big pivot like that, you have to make the investment in facilities and patients, bring in new people who have experience in those kinds of environments. And Michael and Will have been very, very impressive in what they're doing. We're still in this deconstruction stage, which is what we're going to be in with Capital One Arena. We have to knock a lot of stuff down before we can start to rebuild. And my vibe is, this last draft to get three picks in the first round, that was exactly the kinds of moves that we should be doing. I think this is going to be a long process, but there's no shortcut. And so, but I will tell you, Friday's game, preseason game, was the best attended preseason Wizards game since 2018. And we were able to sell more tickets than we did to the Caps preseason game. So I think the fans are excited. I think young players get them highly motivated.
For sure, and it's an exciting time with those three first-round picks. Last thing I'll ask you, Ted, is through that process and then restarting it again, was obviously, I'm not trying to discount the fact that luck plays and all the things that you mentioned, but if you're not trying to find lessons and things in life, I guess you don't get to a position that like where you are now. So was there something you learned about building an NBA team, going through it the first time around, seeing how maybe even it can go wrong in ways outside of your control that you take into this one, that as you ask Michael and Will questions to just play your role in this, that you're like, hey, I'm thinking about this in the back of my mind?
Well, I think culture becomes really, really important. Being able to recruit players and early on make sure that they're the right caliber of player that understand the opportunity that they have in being a high pick and their responsibility to the community and the fan base. I also think health is really important. I think that, you know, so many teams have been waylaid by their number one picks. When Derrick Rose retired the other day, there's some people that forgot, like, he was MVP, and he was massively talented and great, and then just had this series of injuries. And so we want to make sure that's part of the investment that we're making, just world-class in everything that we're doing around the science of care for these players. But then you need the players and their people and infrastructure to realize that's part of their social responsibility. They have to adhere to the protocols, adhere to the plans. And I think there's been enough data that's out there that says if players can stay on the court, they can sign that one extra contract, they can make a lot of money, that they'll start to listen. And so, you know, we're going to cast our lot with young players and try to keep them within this new culture. And, you know, when I look at the people that have surrounded Michael and Will, I think they were telling us the other day that since they've joined, players, coaches, employees, we have more than 50 new people. So we're turning around the whole organization because it just didn't get us to be the previous organization, just didn't get us to be playoff caliber. And then once you make the playoffs, it's you get those lessons in the playoffs and, you know, can you improve from time to time and series to series? And so, you know, it's going to be a long, hard road, but I think the fans are up for it. We're certainly up for it, and we had no other choice. So, you know, I'm very committed to it.
Ted Leonsis, the chairman of Monumental Sports. Ted, thank you so much. All right, that was good to talk to Ted yesterday. First time that we have ever chatted Anthony in person. I guess he listens, though, to the show. He said I was charming.
And look, that's what he said.
He said I was charming. I've said blogs. I've criticized, at this point, I've been in D.C. for almost 10 years. I've criticized everybody. Sometimes I'm right, sometimes I'm wrong. And I think with some stuff there that he probably didn't love, and if I was him, I wouldn't have loved it either. But that's okay. That's this job. And so I appreciate Ted being willing to have a chat, even with someone who has been critical of certain things. And like I told Ted, what would you be doing Wizards-wise right now? Exactly what you're doing. So good job, Ted and Michael and Will. And you'll hear our chat with Will Dawkins at 6:30 on Thursday. We'll be live from Capital One Arena, of course, ahead of the Wizards and Celtics season opener, NBA opens in general tonight, Wizards opener on Thursday. And coming up at 6:30 today, one-on-one with Kyle Kuzma. When we get back, though, Mitch Tischler joins us to pick up our discussion on the breaking news of the day that Jamin Davis has been released by the Commanders. Tischler Tuesday next on the Team 980.